Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kaf Ked Amud Aleph, 12 lines down. Tan Rabbanan, Amapelet Yad Chatucha, woman who discharges a hand with Chatucha means there are developed fingers. You can tell that it has the shape of a hand. Regel Chatucha, similarly with the leg, you have toes or some distinction already or form that's there that gives indication that it's a regel. Imot Mea Leida, then that's considered to be a Leida. We don't suppose that it maybe came from a body that was not fully developed or developed enough that be classified as a leida. We see this as being a siman, an indication that there was a birth that took place over here. Rav Chista, Rabba bar Rav Huna, Da'amrei Tarvayu, they both say about this, Einot Nimla Yimei Tohar. We don't give her the Yimei Tohar. If it's classified as a leida, she gets Yimei Tuma, which for a Zachar is 7 days, for an Akiva is 14 days. And then afterwards you'd have Yimei Tohar, which are days where even if she has setting of Dam, she is still Tehora. There for a Zachar you would get 33 days, for an Akiva you'd get 66. Over here we don't know whether it's a Zachar and Akiva, so you get the Chumrot of both, which would be that 14 days of Tuma for the Akiva, and then only a remaining 26 days of Tahara to finish up those of a Zachar, because we don't know if it was a Zachar and a Keva. What Rav Chista and Rabba bar Rav Huna come to be Mechadesh over here is, she gets no Yimei Tohar whatsoever. We only give her Yimei Tuma, and no Yimei Tohar. My time up. Ema Hirchika Leidata. Maybe the birth took place long ago. The hand, or the foot, the arm, the leg, are just indications of a Leida. It's not that they themselves are the Leida, because you need, as we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnah, when you have a fetus that is michutach, that comes out in pieces, you need the robe of the fetus to exit before it's considered to be a leida. The hand or the leg itself doesn't have that qualification. They are just an indication that this woman definitely had a fetus inside, and it either dissolved or it came out in pieces and we didn't see it. Whatever the reason is, she had a leida, and this is just an indication that that leida took place. The problem is we don't know when she crossed the threshold of the majority of the fetus exiting. Could be that it happened now. Could be it happened 2 weeks ago. Could have happened 3-4 weeks ago. And this is just the residual of whatever's left inside of her. So because of that, we don't give her any Yimei Tohar, because all this told us is that she has a leida. When that leida took place, we have no idea. Could have been today, could have been yesterday, could have been weeks ago that the actual leida took place. So because of that, we are machmir on her that she has tumat leida, because that's a chumra side, that she'll be tmeah for 2 weeks because of the chashash that it's a nekeiva. On the other hand, in terms of yimei tohar, she won't get any yimei tohar, because we can't be lenient with her. We have no idea when the leida took place. Meitiv Rav Yosef, is that really true? Hama pelet? A woman who has a miscarriage, venuda mahipila, and she has no idea what was discharged in this miscarriage, whether it was a male or a female, teshev the zachar ulinekeva, that she gives the chumrot of both zachar and nekeva, as what we just described, that she keeps 2 weeks of tuma, 26 days of tahara, that's the chumrot of both the zachar and the nekeva. V'izakadatka, if you think, hikoki aigavna, any situation like you just described here, ema hirchika leidata, maybe over there she gave birth much earlier, and whatever she is discharging now is just a portion of the fetus, but the majority of the fetus exited way long ago, litne ulinida. Why are you missing the third possibility, which is that she's tameh tumat nida? And that is because maybe the leida is long done, and she's already post the days of leida. Whatever she discharged now makes her into a nida, because you had ptichat ha-rechem, and ptichat ha-rechem, we said, comes with a automatic flow of dam or an automatic assumption of tuma. So there is a third possibility now, which is zachar, nekeva, or nida. We should be machmir on her for all three of those items, if you are correct, that we're choshesh for this idea that when there's a discharge, maybe that discharge is only an indication of a birth, but it itself is not the birth. So Amar Abaye, Ein Hochanami, you're right, it should have said Nida, but Itana the Nida, had it written the Nida, Hava Mina Mivia Kurban Veinu Nechal. Our fear would be that people would think she has to make a Kurban Leida, but it's a Safek. There's a three-way Safek here. Zachar, Nekeva, Nida. Now, zachar nekeva means that she brings a korban, and it's ne'achal, it's eaten. Nida means that there was no birth here at all. And if there's no birth, then you bring a korban, but it's not eaten. That's not true over here. Over here, we know for sure there is a leida. We're not questioning whether there was a leida or not a leida. The only question was it a zachar nekeva? The third safek is that, maybe the leida happened a long time ago. But that doesn't mean there wasn't a leida. There was a leida for sure. If there's a leida for sure when she brings her korban, it is ne'echal. So had you written the word nida, it would have been misleading, making it think that there's even a safek with regards to the korban. That's why the Mishnah doesn't write the word nida, kamash malan, de ne'echal, to teach us that it is ne'echal. So Eino Kanami, it should have written the word nida, but had it written it, it would have been misleading. So you do have to worry, you do have to be choshesh for that possibility, but you didn't explicitly write that in the Mishnah because that would have misled you to believe that you don't eat the korban that she brings. So we don't write nida to tell you that it's a korban leida vadait, a korban leida vadait, and you eat it. Just the only question with regards to the tuma, we still have this safek, this third safek, which is maybe she gave birth a long time ago. Whatever she's seeing now is the residual of whatever she had beforehand. Amar Rav Huna, hotziu baret yado. If a fetus extends its hand out, v'chzira, and then pulled it back in, imot me'al leida. That is the determining point of leida, and the woman becomes to me'al leida, meaning it's deemed to be a birth at that point. Shenemar, because we see in the pasuk by Yehuda and Tamar, when Tamar is going to give birth, it says, v'hi b'leita, v'yiten yad, that when she goes to give birth, the twins, one of them sticks his arm out, and then it pulls it back, and then the other one exits first. And you see the pasuk deems vayiten yad as vayhi belidita, when she was giving birth. So the arm extending out is deemed to be a leida, according to this pasuk. If that's the case, then she's tamei tumat leida. Meiti Rav Yehuda hotziya ubaret yudo, eini mo chusheshet l'chol davar. Seems to be a braita that says just the opposite, and seems to be unequivocal about it, which is, that a woman who has a fetus that extends her hand outwards, ain't chosheshet l'chol davar. You don't have to worry about anything. It's not classified as anything. It's not classified as a birth, not classified as a nidah, nothing. Amar Rav Nachman, l'didim mifarshali mine d'Rav Huna. So I have an explanation, or I heard an explanation for that which Rav Huna said in order to reconcile it with the braita. L'chush, chosheshet. Yimei toar, lo yavinan la, adenafi grubei. Lachush means we're chosheish for a leida, but not that we think there really is a leida, and for that reason she doesn't get yimei tohar, she doesn't get the regular yimei tohar for leida, until the rove of the fetus has exited, which is what we said until now, that the way to have a birth is when you have a miscarriage, when you have a nafel, then the rove has to exit. Otherwise, by a live birth, if the head gets out of the rove of the head, then it's classified as a leida. So over here, the hand going out should not be classified as a leida. And so what he's explaining is that Rav Huna is not saying that it is a real leida. The Braita tells you it's not a leida. All he's saying is that we're chosesh, meaning seemingly, we'll see this in a second, midrabanan, we worry about it, and we make it as if there was a leida, midrabanan. Where it says, v'aini mo chosesh l'chol davar kamar, the Braita seems, again, unequivocal, that you don't have to worry about anything. Forget about drabanan. Anything. It says you don't worry when the hand comes out. In a Torah, you don't worry about anything. But midrabanan, we do worry about it. Wait a minute. You quoted me a pasuk from Bereshit by the birthing of the twins of Tamar. There it says, you see from there that the yad is classified as a Leida, it says, midrabanan, v'kras machta ba'alma. It's really a din derabanan, and the pasuk is just a way to lean on that, to say that it makes sense to have such a din derabanan, because we find in the Torah that a yad is classified or spoken as if there was a leida, even though there wasn't necessarily a leida, midoraita for tuma and tahara. And over here we're going to be chosheshet for the fact that there is tuma, at least midrabanan, and midoraita, there is nothing going on until the rove exits. We shall have tum'ah now, but she will not have a din of tohar. You may tohar because it wasn't the real leida over here. The truth is that my nafkamina, because she should be tamei tumat nida, because you have tichat arechem. So if there's already tumat nida, then you have 7 days of Tumah already. And if you have 7 days of Tumah, then why does it matter that she's classified as a Leidami Derabanan? So the answer to that will either be because of Nikeva. It's a Nikeva, you'll need 2 weeks of Tumah, not 1 week of Tumah, so it'll be different than a Nida. Or the Orch Lener suggests that the Nafka Mina could be if she's already a Nida. So then the extension of the hand doesn't make her any more of a Nida. She's in the middle of her 7 days of Nida. But if we deem it a Leida Mi Derabanan, then that would add on additional days of Tumah, and therefore there's a Nafka Mina as to having a Leida Mi Derabanan versus just Tumat Nida. Or the possibility is raised here that the hand being discharged is not big enough in order to be considered Ptichat Erechem. We discussed this when we had that sugya about Ptichat Erechem, that there is at least a minimum shiur it has to open before we classified it as a Eifshar the Ptichat Erechem without a Riyat Dam. But that means it has to reach a certain threshold. That threshold is at least maybe according to the Ritva, Yad. And that's by our sugya here. In two instances, we spoke about a Yad coming out, and we don't speak about her being Tamei, Tumat, Nida. One was our case right here, where we say that it's only Rabbanon, it's not Midoraita. So that would be because the opening of the Rechem is not considered to be big enough. And the previous case, where she discharges a hand, and we say that we Choshesh for the Leida, but we don't call her a Nida. The only reason we call her a Nida is because she was Meracheket, because we thought the Leida took place a long time ago. We don't think of it because inherently she is a Nida right now. And why not? Why don't we say she's a Nida because of the Ptichat Rechem? In both those instances, you could answer, according to the Ritva, that the issue of Ptichat Erechem is not triggered by a small item exiting, like a hand, and therefore it would not be under the rubric of Ein Ptichat Erechem without Riyat Dam. And obviously that has ramifications, as we noted before, for gynecological visits, when the doctor is checking if he opens up the Rechem. And again, here it might be different, because here we're talking about a baby's hand, there you're talking about a doctor's hand, and so it's much bigger. So you have to know what the size is in order for that to be. Before we spoke about the shpoferet being maybe the minimum size. Here the Ritva speaks about a hand. So it's somewhere in that range as to what is the size you need before it's considered to be Ptichat Erechem. All right, next Mishnah. Amapelet tumtum vandroginus. Someone who miscarries a fetus that is either a tumtum and androginus. Tumtum is from the word tamam, or to be sealed up. So tumtum is a being that is sealed up, and therefore we don't know whether they are male or female. Safek zachar, safek nikeva. And if you open them up, if you tear open the area, sometimes you can't determine whether they are male or female, because you'll see which gender is under the skin that is there that's not giving you visibility into which gender they are. Androgynous, on the other hand, is a being that has both male and female parts, and therefore you can't figure out whether it's a male or female because they are displaying both parts, a male part and a female part. It comes from the Greek, at least the Oroch suggests it comes from the Greek of andro, which means man, and genus, which means a woman or a female. That's the word gynecology that comes from a woman's doctor is the same thing. Genus or genus is the Greek for that. So it's a man-woman. It's a combination of a man and a woman. Teshev is a zachar nekeva. Since they are spekot, you have to then worry about it both from the tzad zachar and the tzad nekeva, which means you have the chumrot of both, which is nekeva is 2 weeks of tumah, and the zachar you only get 26 days of tara. Tumtum vizachar. So until now we were dealing with a single birth, a tumtum or an androgynous, and since they are both safek zachar safek nekeva, you have to worry about both of them. Now we have twins that are born. You have a tumtum and a zachar, an androgynous and a zachar. There, teshev the zachar and the nekeva. Because the zachar, we know for sure. The question is, the tumtum and the androgynous, are they considered to be a nekeva? If that's the case, then you'd have to worry about the zachar and the nekeva, so that's the chumrah. Tumtum v'nekeva, androgynous v'nekeva. If you have twins, a nekeva, and then a tumtum with it, or nekeva and androgynous with it, teshev the nekeva bilvad. Then you don't have to worry, because you had a nekeva vada'it, and subsumed under a nekeva vada'it is either of the other two possibilities. A zachar is subsumed within a nekeva, because his days are shorter than that of a nekeva, and if it's a nekeva, then you're already doing the days of a nekeva. So there is no need to be worried about the tzad zachar, you don't have to worry about the tzad nekeva It's not mechutach if the baby came out in pieces, or misuras, or came out in the breech, feet first. Mishiatza rubo, harihu ki yulod. Then when it exits the majority of the body, that is when it's considered to be a birth. So the majority of the fetus needs to exit in order for it to be deemed a birth. Yatza kid darko, he comes out normally, which means whole and head first, ashi yitzei rov rosho, until the majority of the head exits, vezu rov rosho. How do you know when you reach the rove of the head? Mishiyatza padachto. Once the forehead has exited, you've already crossed over the threshold of the rove harosh. And if that's the case, it's deemed a birth already at that point in time. So here you have two sections to the Mishnah. Today's daf is going to deal with the first section of the Mishnah, which is the tumtum and androgynous aspect of it. The latter part of the Mishnah will be the subject of tomorrow's daf, which is the question as to when is something deemed a birth. Again, the basic principle is, if it's a viable entity that's coming out in a normal fashion, then its rov rosho is deemed to be the birth. If it's any other situation, then generally it'll be rov gufo, the majority of its body, before it's considered to be a birth. Hashta tumtum luchudei, mandroginus luchudei. In the Mishnah it says that if you have a tumtum by itself, or an androgynous by itself, you said, teshev v'zachar l'nekeva. That's what the Mishnah told us. Then the next line in the Mishnah is, tumtum v'zachar, androgynous v'zachar, miboy, what do you need that for? Meaning that adding in the zachar doesn't do anything to change the dynamic. Androgynous and tumtum alone will require zachar nekeva. Now that you had a zachar, doesn't change the fact that it would be koshesh for the tzad nekeva. So why is adding in the zachar a relevant case in the Mishnah? It doesn't add any information you wouldn't have known otherwise. You could argue simply that it is a parallel structure in the Mishnah, which is the Mishnah mentions them alone, then mentions them with zachar, and then mentions them with nekeva, where the din of nekeva is different. That's a possibility. But the Gemara here is looking for a chiddush in the mentioning of the zachar as well. And the Gemara says, itztrich, we do need it. Ma'u d'teim, I would have thought, ho'il, v'ama Rabbi Yitzchak, we saw back on Daf Chavhei, that Isha Mazrer Techila, you'll let it Zachar. The woman has the Zera from her first. Again, there's this belief that both the man and the woman are Mazriah. The man is Mazriah externally, whereas the woman is Mazrat internally, and the Zera from each of them joined together to create the conception. Obviously, we know today that that's not exactly how it works, but nevertheless, the belief was that if the woman was Mazrat Tchila, then the fetus that was conceived would be a male. Ish Mazriah Tchila, the man was the one who was Mazriah first, then you let it Nekeva, that precipitated a Nekeva. If that's the case, then when you have twins, if it all was conceived at the same time, then both of them should have been males, or both of them should have been females, because either the husband or the wife in the situation, or the man and the woman in the situation, one of them was Mazriah Tchila, and that should be determinant for both fetuses that are produced over here. So, Kamash Malon, that we don't say that, because Eimashnem Hizriu B'Batachat, maybe it happened simultaneously, and therefore Zozachar V'Zenekeva. That'll be the possibility where you will not have the same gender in twins. It will be when one of them was Mazriah before the other, then that would be determinant and both twins would be of the same gender. On the other hand, if they were Mazriah simultaneously, then it could be that the gender is either way. Meaning both, it could be a Zachar, could be a Nekeva, or a possibility that one's a Zachar and one's a Nekeva. So that's the Kamash Malan. The Mishnah is telling us that you still are Choshesh Netzad Nekeva. Even though there's a Zachar, Vadai, along with this other entity, we don't assume automatically that if this is a Zachar, the other one's a Zachar. Because they have this possibility that you could have a zachar nekeva, even though based on the Gemara's understanding here, that would be a lower probability. The higher probability would be that they either were both zacharim or both nekevot. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav, tumtum v'androgynous, shira'u loven o odem. Tumtum and androgynous, who have a sighting of white or a sighting of red, ein chayavin abiyat mikdash, v'ein sofim aleihem et truma. You're not chayav. If they enter into the Mikdash with their Tuma, they are not chayav to bring a Korban. And their Truma, you're not going to be Soreif, the Truma, because it's a Safek as to whether they are Tmeim or not Tmeim. Therefore, you're Toleh. You wait with the Truma. You don't eat it. You don't use it anymore. You wait for it to be either Rot or become Vadai Tameh. and then you'll dispose of it, but right now you can't do anything with it. That is because we don't know whether there's zachar or a nekeva. For zachar, a sighting of white, loven, is an indication of tumah. That's a seminal emission, which would make him tameh. For a female, the sighting of dam, red, is tumah, because then she's a nida. But over here, we don't know whether they are zachar and nekeva. If it's a zachar, and then you have a sighting of red, that's a meaningless sighting. And vice versa, if you have a woman who has a sighting of white, that's not a sighting of nida. So here you have a safek tuma with regards to this tumtum and androgynous. Ra'ul loven ve'odem ke'echad. If they have a sighting of both white and red, then ain't chayavim al bi'at mikdash. You're still not chayav for bi'at mikdash, meaning to bring a korban if you enter into the mikdash, even though here you are vadai tameh. This entity, this tumtum and androgynous, either way is definitely tameh. They had a sighting of red and white. So irrespective of whether they're zachar nekeva, they've had the sighting that would make them tameh. Despite that fact, there still is no din of tumat migdash vikodushav in terms of the korban. Aval sofim aleihem et ha-trumah. Here, the trumah is vadai tmeah. If that's the case, then you would burn the trumah because it's trumat tmeah. As far as tumat migdash vikodushav, there the safek, even though it's not a safek, there still is a problem here. Shenamar, because the pasuk says, in Parshat Naso, with regards to sending out Meim from the Mikdash, or the areas of Kedusha, says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe l'emor, Tzaveh b'nei Yisrael v'yishalchu min ha-machaneh. You have to send out of the machaneh, kol tzarua, b'chol zav, b'chol tamei l'nefesh. Three different levels of Tumah, Tzorat, Zav, and tamei nefesh, tamei mate. Mizachar ad nekeva tishalechu. From a male to a female, they be sent out, el michutz l'machaneh tishalchum, There's a requirement to send them out, and the pasuk says, "Mizachar v'ad nekeva tishalechu." From male to female, you send them out. Zachar vadai, nekeva vadait. Only if you have a absolute zachar, or you have an absolute nekeva, is that true? Below tumtum ve'androgynous, and not a tumtum and androgynous, where we don't know whether they are a zachar or a nekeva. You need to have a absolute zachar nekeva to have a requirement of being sent out of the machaneh. Absent that, then there's no din of tumat mikdash v'kodoshav. And therefore, even though here they've had a sighting of both white and red, which makes them, by definition, tmeim, they're still not governed by this din of yishalchu mechutz l'machaneh. Because over there it says zachar and nekeva. And you have to be one or the other. You need to be a zachar or a nekeva in order to be sent out. You can't be something where we don't determine and we don't know what you are. And for that reason, you're not subject to the din of Tumat Mikdash Vikodoshav, at least vis-a-vis the Korban. So now, Tosafot over here discusses an issue with regards to Tumtum and Androgynous, something that we spent time on in the Gemara in Bichorot. It was also a sugya that we dealt with in the Gemara in Yuvamot. That is, what exactly is the status of an Androgynous and a Tumtum? Regards to a tumtum, it's clear that it is a safek, a real safek, which is either they are zachar or they are nekeva. And it is not a class safek, it is an individual safek, which means each individual, if you open them up, you're able to cut open the skin that's covering over that area, they either will be a zachar or they will be a nekeva. But it's not that all of them are zacharim or all of them are nekevot. Each one individually, you have to look at the tumtum and determine zachar nekeva. That makes it a real safek with regards to tumtum. And then, it's not again a class safek, it is a safek of the individual, and each individual you have to determine separately. An androgynous is a little different in the fact that there is a position that an androgynous is a safek zakar, safek nekeva, similar to what we just said by a tumtum. There is a view that it is also the same thing. We don't know whether it's a zakar nekeva. We eventually maybe can determine, or each one of them you could determine by figuring out which one is the functional aver, and then know whether it's a zachar nekeva. That's one possibility. But there is another dayah, which we bumped into again previously, which is that an androgynous is a biria bifnei atzma. It's its own creation. It's not a zachar, not a nekeva. It's a third entity that is a completely independent entity. So then that would be a new categorization, which is not zachar or nekeva. And therefore, it's not a safek zakar, safek nekeva. It's a totally different entities. It's a fake whether it even is classified as Zachar or Nekevah, because it might be its own entity. So now, the Tosafot over here questions Rav's position here vis-a-vis what he says in other places. And that Rav Posek to Rabbi Yossi Bandroginos, and Rabbi Yossi in the Braita says that an Androginos is a Birya b'fnei atzmohu. V'lo yichriya bo chachamim. And the Chachamim never concluded whether it was a Zakar or a Nekeva. Then Tosafot says, what does that mean? If it is a Birya b'fnei atzmo, what does it mean that the Chachamim didn't determine whether it was a Zakar or a Nekeva? It's a Birya, then it's neither a Zakar nor a Nekeva. So the way that Rabbi Yossi has explained is that it's not a Birya, a third entity. Ella, it is a Safek. And that's what's mashma from the fact that it says, Lohi Chriyo, the Chachamim to determine was a Zakar and a Nekeva. And that is similar to what Rav says over here in our Gemara, that it's a Safek Zakar, Safek Nekeva. The problem is that if you look in the other Sugyot, it doesn't sound like that what is what meant by the case of a Birya B'fnei Atzma, because the Gemara says, why do you need the Torah to exclude something that is a Safek? The Torah doesn't address Safek, because Safek is our problem, not something that God has. God knows whether it's a Zachar Nekeva. So God can write Zachar Nekeva in the Torah, and that's fine. We don't, the Torah addressed the issue. We who don't know, then the Torah doesn't address it because it's our problem, it's our lack of knowledge, it's not the fact that the Torah doesn't address it. If it is a Birya B'fnei Atzmo, if it's its own entity, then the Torah could be addressing it because it's not a Safek. It's its own entity. Its own entity, the Torah could come to exclude that. So there, the Gemara seems to indicate that the Torah only needs to exclude things if they are their own entity. If it's a Safek Zachar, Safek Nekeva, then it's Muda B'fnei Shemayim, and therefore you don't need the Torah to address it. So Tosafot comes up here with a new category, and that is V'yesh Lomar Do'olam Safeku, that the Birya B'fnei Atzma, this Androginus, is really just a Safek. Lo dami the safek tumtum, but it's different than the safek of tumtum. The tumtum lo shayach the mitnei bei velo hichriu chachamim. By the tumtum, you can't write that the chachamim couldn't determine whether it was a zakar nekeva. Tein kulan shavin. As I mentioned before, tumtum is not a class safek. It is an individual safek. Ulepamim shnikranim sa zakar, ulepamim nekeva. When you open it up, sometimes the individual is a zakar, sometimes they are nekeva. Safek shelo yechol yitbarer. And that safek can be determined. Aval androginus kulam o zachar o nekeva. Androginus is a class safek. It's not an individual safek. Every androginus has the same safek as to whether they are zachar or nekeva. And if we could determine what it was, it'd be true of all of them. They'd all have that same classification as being either zachar or nekeva. Aval lo yichriu chachamim ezo. The chachamim never determined which one it is. So Tosafot over here introduces a third category of what an androgynous is. The first possibility is that an androgynous is no different than a tumtum. It's a fake zakar, it's a fake nekeva, and it's one or the other. And every individual, you'd have to figure out whether they are zakar or nekeva, and that's the safek over here. We had another opinion that it's a birya b'fnei atzma, it's its own entity. It's not a zakar, not a nekeva, it's its own entity. Then Tosafot comes up with a third category, which is, it's a birya that is a safek. Which means that it is a class problem. It's not each individual you have to determine Zachar Nekeva. It's a question of the classification as an androgynous as a whole. The whole class of people that are in this classification of androgynous, are they Zacharim or the Nekeva? Whatever you decide, it'll be true of all of them. But that's a safek that the Chachamim could not be Machrian. So there is a safek, but it's different. It's not an individual safek. It's a safek that every androgynous has the same status. Either Zachar or Nekeva, we just don't know which. This has nafkamino in terms of them interacting with each other. So for instance, if one androgynous gets married to another androgynous, you don't have to worry about kiddushin over there. Because either they're both zakharim, or both nekevot, according to this view of Tosafot, and therefore there's no safek kiddushin. On the other hand, if you have a tumtum, if one tumtum has kiddushin with another tumtum, you have a safek. Because one of them might be a male, one of them might be a female. You don't know. Each individual has an safek associated with them. Therefore, you would have a safek kiddushin with that. So that is the difference between androgynous and tumtum with regards to this safek. You also have the same thing with regards to being motzi. For instance, if they blow shofar. If an androgynous blows the shofar for another androgynous, they're yotzei. Because either both of them are males, both of them are females, and whoever blew the shofar can be motzi, the other party, and you don't have an issue. On the other hand, a tumtum that blows shofar for another tumtum cannot be motzi then, because one tumtum might be in a keva, one be a zakhar, and then the keva can't be motzi the zakhar. That's the difference in whether it's an individual safek or a class safek. So Tosafot introduces this third category whereby it's a birya bifnei atzmah, as the Gemara calls it, but it's not really a birya where we consider it to be its own classification, not zakhar, not the keva, but a birya which means that its entity is a safek zakhar, safek nekeva, and then we have to determine which one it is. We couldn't determine. But then every androgynous has that same safek, and they are all in the same category. Either all of them are zakharim or all of them nekevot, we just don't know. And so the safek remains a class safek for the androgynous. That's an important chiddush of the Tosafot over here. The second thing that Tosafot discusses over here is, once you say that, I understand why the Torah eliminates tumtum, because it says zakhar o nekeva, which means zakhar vadai, or nekeva vadait. But now, according to this new explanation of Tosafot, I don't understand why the pasuk has to exclude the androgynous, or how it excludes the androgynous, because androgynous, lama tzarich lemute. Why do you have to exclude it? Kevin the Savar Rav, the Safek Avi, the Kulan Shavin, Kamesh Maya, Galia. Then they're all the same, and God knows whether they are a Zachar or a Nekeva. So then why are they excluded from the Pasuk of Zachar and Nekeva? Because they are either a Zachar or Nekeva, and God knows which one they are. We just don't know which one they are. And therefore, it's not a classic case of Safek. If that's the scenario, why are they excluded from the Pasuk? The Tosafot says, "Avahoch diktiv mi zachar ad nekeva," because it says, "From a zachar to a nekeva, igal meimar de mamayit la mitam shu mishuneh." So there may be an exclusion because you're not normal; it's not the regular zachar, not nekeva. But be safek mishum doliyadana im zachar mimayle o mi nekeva mimayle. So the question is whether we are excluding them from zachar or nekeva, because the idea here is zachar vadait means a normal zakhar. And if a nekeva means a normal nekeva. So one of the two words over here is excluding them. We don't know which word it is. It's either zakhar or nekeva. And the reason it's excluded is not because zakhar vadai and nekeva vadai, because it is one of those two. The reason it's excluded is because zakhar and nekeva teaches you that you have to be like everybody else. If you're not like everybody else, then you're an outlier. The outlier is excluded over here either because zakhar means a normal zakhar, or nekeva means a normal nekeva. Absent that, you're not going to be included, and that's what excludes the androgynous. And the truth is, you don't need both psukim according to that. You only need one pasuk, or v'nira lomar detrei miute ninu. Actually, there are two miutim over here. Zakhar and nekeva. The fact that you have two miutim, one is to deal with androgynous, and one is to deal with tumtum. So whichever one you need for androgynous, whether it's the zakhar because it is a zakhar, or whether it's nekeva because it is a nekeva, it's excluded because it's not a normal zakhar, it's not a normal nekeva. Whichever other word is left over, then will be used to exclude a tumtum. That's how Tosafot deals with Rav's position over here, based on his chiddush that the androgynous is this new form of safek, which is a class safek. Mara says, lema misayile. Let us say that the following braita is supportive of Rav's contention, because it says exactly what Rav says, which is, tum tum androgynous, shro loven o odem, if they see either white or red, ein chayavin al biyat mikdash, fein sofim aleim et teshumah. There it's a safek, so then you don't bring a korban for going into the mikdash, and you don't burn the trumah, because it's not vadei. In terms of not bringing the korban, in this scenario, the reason you don't bring the korban is because it's a safek as to whether you are Tamei or not Tamei. And as Rashi notes over here, there's a risk. If you're Safek Tamei, that if you're not Chayav the Korban, then you're bringing Chulin the Azara. And you're in violation of bringing Chulin the Azara. So you can't risk it and just say, oh, I'll bring the Korban anyway. Because in the case of Safek, we're not even certain you're Chayav the Korban. If you're not Chayav the Korban, you can't bring a Korban Ulev Yoreid just as a voluntary offering. So that's the risk over here. Although the truth is, from the Drashot that we're going to see, that it even applies by Tuma Vadai, then the reasoning why you can't bring the Korban has nothing to do with the Safek Chulin Vazara. Has to do with the fact that the Pasuk excludes these cases from a requirement of Tumat Mikdash Vikodoshav. So Rashi's statement must be, when you read this line before you get to the next line, before you get to the next din, it would have been true here if it's Safek according to everyone. Now with the Drasha, it would be true even in the case of Vadai. Whereas, in the case of Raul Lovin Vild, then, in the case where they saw both white and red, where they're Vadai Ketameim, because they saw Keachat, Ein Chayavin al Biat Mikdash, you still don't have to bring a Korban in terms of Miat Mikdash, Abel Sofim Relevant to Truma. The Truma is Vadai Tamei now, and you can be Soreif the Truma, because it's Truma Tameya. As far as Mikdash is concerned, you know, it's not the case. We don't know why in the Braita, but we're assuming now it's the same as what Rav just told us. That's the case. The Braita is supportive, or says exactly what Rav said. My daima, what's the reason? Labishim Shinemar Mizachar Vadnekeva Tishalechu. Because of that Pasuk, that's why you don't bring it. Zachar Vadai, Nekeva Vadait, below Tumtum Ve Androgynous. So not somebody who is not a Zachar Vadai, not a Nekeva Vadait. So that again, if that's the reasoning behind the Braita, then it's saying exactly what Rav said. Amarula, no. That's not why the Braita says what it says. Hamani Rabbi Eliezer. The author of this Braita is Rabbi Eliezer. It's not Rabbi Eliezer Omer Hasheretz Ve'ne'elam Mimenu. So these are the psukim that are found in Vayikra Hey. In Vayikra Hey, it describes the reasons that you bring a Korban Oleh V'Yoreid. One of the categories of items that brings a Korban Oleh V'Yoreid is what we call Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav. And it says here, O nefesh, asher tiga b'chol davar tamei, o b'nivlat chayat meya, o b'nivlat be'imat meya, o b'nivlat sheretz tamei, v'ne'elam mimenu, and he forgot about it, v'hu tamei v'ashem, and he is tamei and guilty now because he entered into the Mikdash, or ate kodoshim, while he was tamei. So the drosha that Rabbi Eliezer has is, the last form of tuma was, Obinivlat Sheretz Tamei. And immediately afterwards it says, Vinne Elam Bimenu. He forgot. Al Helam Sheretz Hu Chayav. Vinu Chayav Al Helam Mikdash. He is Chayav for forgetting about the Sheretz. He's not Chayav forgetting about the Mikdash. The problem of Tumat Mikdash for Kodoshav is, you are Tamei, and you entered into the Mikdash. You are Tamei, and you ate Kodoshim. Now, this is a case of Shogeg, because you only bring a Korban when you are Shogeg. So now, what did he do that made him into a shogeg? Well, he could have forgotten one of two things in order to make him a shogeg here. He could have forgotten that he was tamei and entered into the Mikdash. Could have forgotten he was tamei and ate kodashim. Or, he could have known that he was tamei, but forgot he was in the Mikdash. Could have known he was tamei and forgot that he was eating kodashim. So you could have two forms of forgetting. It's what otherwise is known in the beginning of the Gemara in Shavuot as shtayim shein arba. You have two cases that turn out to be four cases, which is, that you can forget multiple items. You can forget both the possibility of being Tamei, and you can forget the possibility of Mikdash or the Kodoshim. What Rabbi Eliezer says is, the Pasuk tells you, B'nivlat Sheretz Tamei, B'ne'elam Mimenu. Only for forgetting about the Tuma are you Chayav. If you forget about the Mikdash, you are not Chayav, or you don't bring a Korban Olev Yorei. Rabbi Akiva Omer, B'ne'elam Mimenu, B'hu Tamei. The Pasuk says, and he was Tamei. Similar refrain as to what Rabbi Eliezer said, which is, only for Tuma, forgetting about the Tuma, are you Chayav a Korban Olev Yorei, a Korban Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav. It is not true if you forget about the Mikdash or forget about the Kodoshim. V'amrinan, and we said, my Benayu. What's the difference between them? They both say the same thing in the end, which is, if you forget about Tuma, you're Chayav. If you forget about the Mikdash, you're not Chayav. V'amar Chizkia, Sheretz v'nevela, Ika b'neyu. The difference between them is the type of Tuma that you have. The Rabbi Lezer Savar, Bein an Adi Yada, Ibi Sheretz itme, O b'nevela itme. He needs to know what he is Tamei for, in order for it to be considered Tumat Mikdash v'kodoshav. He has to know he was Tamei, and what he was Tamei from, and then forget about that Tuma. He learns that from the fact that right before the word v'ne'elam mimenu, it says, O b'nivlat sheretz tamei, which tells you he knew which tuma he was tamei, and then he forgot about it. So that's the only way you're going to be chayav tumat mikdash v'kodoshav, is if you know why you were tamei, and then you forgot. V'rav Yekiva savar lo b'inan, you don't need it, because he says, subsequent to v'ne'elam mimenu, it says, v'hu tamei. You just need to know that you were tamei. You don't need to know exactly why you're tamei. Just need to know that you're tamei. V'ne'elam mimenu, and then you forgot that you were tamei. So lav amar Rabbi Eliezer hatam b'inan de'ada ibisheret itmei obenevela itmei. Over there, Rabbi Eliezer makes the requirement or has this higher threshold of knowledge then you need to know how you became Tamei. Was it an Avela? Was it a Sheretz? Was it a Tamei Mate? You need to know how you became Tamei. Hachanami. So too in our scenario here, with the Tumtum and Androgynous, being a Dieda, Ibeloven Itme, Ibeodem Itme. He needs to know whether you became Tamei through the red or through the white. You know you're Tamei Mimanafshach. But that's not enough for Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar has a higher threshold of knowledge, which is you need to know why you are Tamei. And over here, can you tell? Is it because of the white or the red? No. It's Mimanafshach you're Tamei, but not, you don't know which one it is. Aval Rabbi Akiva, Damar Mishum Tumah, Mechayev. On the other hand, for Rabbi Akiva who says, as long as you know you were Tamei, that's enough, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would be Chayav. So Hakanami, so too over here, Mishum Tumah, Mechayev. So too, just like by Sheretz and the Bela, it doesn't matter which one made you Tamei, you just need to know you're Tamei. So too over here, by the Lovin and the Dam, you just need to know which one made you Tamei. Now, based on that, what Ula is pointing out is, if you read this Braita as being Shita Rabbi Eliezer, then it becomes a dat yachid. That means Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. That means that Rav's Shita then is not necessarily supported by the Braita, because the Braita is dealing with the dat yachid of Rabbi Eliezer, and then that's not supportive of Rav, because that just means there's a dat yachid and a Braita that thinks like him, and it's for a totally different reason. It's not for the reason that Rav gave, it's for a different reason, and the Chachamim or Rabbi Kiva disagrees, and that means that Rav has Tanaim that are arguing on him, or disagreeing with them, so we can't look at this Braita as necessarily being supportive of Rav's contention. Now, what's interesting over here is the Gemara says, "Hamani Rabbi Eliezer he." Now, the Bali et Tosafot point out that an androgynous chayvin alav skila kizachar. Rabbi Eliezer believes that if a male has a relationship with an androgynous, then that is considered to be homosexuality, and you would be stoned for having that relationship with an androgynous. Which means that Rabbi Eliezer thinks that androgynous is a zachar vadai. If that's the case, then all of this Gemara doesn't make any sense because he already has a determination as to what androgynous is. He doesn't have a safik. Tosafos says two things which are interesting only because it has ramifications throughout Shas. So first of all, he says, the Gemara over there says, lo dochol amar Rabbi Eliezer, androgynous chayvin alav. First of all, when Rabbi Eliezer says an androgynous is like a zachar, that's not for every halacha. Happens to be true by the case of homosexuality. It's not necessarily true by other halachot. So if you say that, then over here too, by tuma, maybe it's different. And then that would make this all relevant, what we're saying here. Oh, yesh tomar, tahocha, hochi kamar. This is what's meant when we said Rabbi Eliezer is the author of the Braita. Haitana, damar in chayvino, biat migdash, darish hasheretz, ki Rabbi Eliezer. He learns like Rabbi Eliezer, which is a very important notation of the Tosafot over here. You think when the Gemara says Hamani, who's the author of this Braita, who's the author of this Mishnah, we normally think what that means, that Tana is the author of this Mishnah. That Tana is the author of the Braita. What Tosafot points out is that's not always true. It may be that not that Tana is the author of the Braita, but rather the author of the Braita is subscribing to that Tana's position with regards to this matter. Or the Tana of the Mishnah is subscribing to the Tana who has that position. And that's what Tosafot suggests over here. When we say that this Braita is Rabbi Eliezer, doesn't necessarily mean that Rabbi Eliezer is the author of the Braita. It might mean that the Tana of the Braita subscribes to Rabbi Eliezer's drusha by Tumat Mikdash V'Kodoshav, which is Tesheretz V'Ne'elam Mimenu. The Sheretz determines what you forgot, and you need to forget exactly what Tumat you had. And that's what this Tana holds. It doesn't hold like Rabbi Eliezer with regards to androgynous, that it's a Zachar. He has a different view there. But with regards to this matter, he holds like Rabbi Eliezer. So whenever the Gemara says Hamani, you have to know that doesn't always mean that that Tana himself is the author of the Braita or Mishnah. Might be just that their position is subscribed to by the Tana of the Mishnah or Braita. Now the Gemara says, V'Rav, Maishna Biat Migdash Dolo. Why is it by Biat Migdash that we say, even when you have both Lovin and Odem, and for sure they're Chayav, that we say that you're not Chayav, Tumat Mikdash Ukdashav, you don't have to bring a korban. Tichtiv, Mizachar Vad Nekevat, Tishalechu. As we brought the Pasuk for Rav already, because the Pesukim in Naso and Perakei of Bamidbar tell you that in order to be Shalech Min HaMachaneh, you have to be a Zachar or a Nekevat Vadait. Zachar Vadai, Nekevat Vadait, Velo Tumtum Ve'Androgynus. Ihachi, Trumanami. By Truma, why don't you say the same thing? Lo Nisrof. Don't burn the Truma, Tichtiv. Because the Pasuk says at the end of Parshat Mitzora, when it wants to summarize, it says, Vadava benidata, Vazav et zobo, Lazachar velanekeva, Leish asher ishkav im tmeya. There it mentions Zachar and Nekeva. Why don't you say the same drasha? Zachar vadai, Nekeva vadait. And so do over there. Maybe the world of Tuma, of Zav, Zava, Nida, all of that don't apply to individuals that are not a Zachar vadai or Nekeva vadait. If that's the case, then maybe there shouldn't be an issue of Srefat Tuma vadai because you don't know. Below Tumtum androgynous, you would exclude a Tumtum androgynous, and therefore you would say that even if they had a sighting, they still would not be Tmeim. How mi violate the Rabbi Yitzchak? Now that the Zachar and the Keva that's written at the end of Parsha Mitzorah, we have a different drasha for that, and therefore it's not extraneous. Dama Rabbi Yitzchak, the Zachar, the Rabota de Mitzorah, the Mayanotav. Zachar comes to teach you that a Mitzorah, a male Mitzorah, has the same din as a Zav with regards to its liquid discharges. And similarly, for a female mitzorah, then she has the same din as a nida, or a zavah, with regards to her liquid discharges. That is because we already know that by a zav, if the zav spits, his saliva has a din like his zav emission, which is that it's an avatuma. His mucus, any type of liquid discharge like meraglain, like urine, all of those have a din like the emission, the Zav emission, which is there in Havatuma. So we know that's true by Zav. We also know that's true by Nida, by a Zavah Gedola. By Mitzorah, we don't have that din. So what the drush of Rav Yitzchak says is, the reason it says, Vadalavah Benidata, Vazavet Zobo, which are both categories of Tuma, where the liquid discharges have a din of Havatuma, then they are also Lazachar Venekeva. They have application to a Zachar Venekeva. And what Zachar and Nekeva are we speaking about? We've had a Zachar Mitzorah and a Nekeva Mitzorah. And that's the reason for Zachar and Nekeva over there. But once you do that, the words Zachar and Nekeva are no longer extraneous. They're not extraneous. Then you can't learn the drasha of no dumtum, no androgynous. Where it says, Vahanami mi baile. Also by the case of Mizachar and Nekeva Tishalechu, we have a different drasha over there. B'mishyeshlo tarab mikveh. Only people, only individuals, who have the ability to become Torah in the mikveh, do they have a din of being sent out of the machaneh? Maprat, the exclusion is the kli cheres. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that earthenware utensils that don't have tara b'mikveh, they don't need to be sent out of the machaneh. So you see, we also have a drasha from Mizachar ad nekeva tishalechu by parashiyat shiluach min ha-machaneh for tmeim, b'yat tumat mikdash v'kodoshav. Also over there, we have a drasha for the Zachar Nekeva to teach you only things that can go to the mikveh have a obligation to be sent out of the machaneh. Things that can't go to the mikveh and become tohor, they don't have an obligation to be sent out of the mikdash, likely cheres. So if that's the case, then Zachar Nekeva are no longer extraneous. If they're not extraneous, then the drasha of Rav doesn't exist. Imkein nichtov rachmana adam. If you just wanted to exclude kli cheres, you could have written adam. Because adam gives you the same definition. Generic man is fine to tell you that only things that go to the mikveh are sent out of the machaneh, not kli cheres. But by the case of tuma over here, of zav and zavah and mitzorah and mitzorat, there you needed zachar nekeva. Adam was not enough. You needed the zachar nekeva to align it with mitzorah and mitzorat to tell you that both of them have the same din. It's not just Adam, it's zachar nekeva. That's the drush over there. So there, you don't have the ability to replace it with the word Adam. Over here, where you could replace Zachar and Nekeva with the word Adam, then the Zachar and Nekeva is extraneous as well, which means you can have two limudim. You can have the limud to exclude Kicheres, and you can have the limud of Rav to say Zachar Vadai and Nekeva Vadait. So maybe if you said Adam, Avamina Klei Metechot Lo. So then, if you wrote Adam, you would have thought that the meaning of the pasuk means humans have to be sent out of the machaneh. Kelim don't need to be sent out of the machaneh at all. Kelim would have included everything, including klei metechot, metal, metallic kelim. They do have tar, they have tarab and mikveh. Nevertheless, you would send them out because they're not adam. So maybe you need the zachar vad nekeva to teach you that klei metechot are still included, not klei cheres. Because if you just wrote adam, adam would seem to indicate human beings are the unique aspect of shliach machaneh. Kelim or not. And then you would come to the conclusion that all Kelim are excluded. Where it says, lo, mikol tmei le nefesh nafka. That we can learn out from anything that's Tamei Nefesh. Anything that becomes Tamei is subject to the din of Shiluach min HaMachaneh. And so therefore, even if you had the word Adam, you wouldn't have thought that Klei Matechot are excluded. And Tosafot points out that Klei Matechot are just an example. It doesn't just mean metallic kelim. It means all kelim. The reason the Gemara mentioned Klei Matechot is because they have the highest form of Tumah, because they have Cherev Harehu Kekalal. Which means that many times metallic kelim don't drop down a dargah, a level of Tumah. They stay at the same level as the Tumah that they come into contact with. And so even though they're more chamor, we would have thought to exclude them from the word Adam. That, the Gemara says, don't do that, because Klon Nefesh Nafka. Right, Zachar Unikeva Lomali. So then why do I have Zachar Unikeva? I have Adam to tell me that only Adam, not Kli Cheres. I would have thought of other Kelim excluded. No, they're included from the Chol Tmei Nefesh. Then why do I need Zachar Unikeva? Likid Rav. That's Rav's Joshua, that Zachar Vadai, Nikeva Vadait. Famous Kula Likid Rav, who da'ata. Wait a minute. Maybe they're doing the other way around. Maybe the whole Pasuk is coming to teach us the din of Rav, and then we shouldn't learn the other dinim over here. Mar says, Imkein Nichtov Zachar Unikeva. He should have just written Zachar Unikeva Tishalechu. My Mizachar Ad Nikeva. Why does it use the word Ad over here? Ad Kol Davar Sheish Lo Tara B'Mikveh. It's coming to tell you that Mizachar Ad Nikeva. What is from a Zachar until a Nikeva? What's the commonality between them? That they both have the ability to be Mitaher by Mikveh. So those are the items that have a requirement of Shiluach HaMachaneh. Otherwise, you don't have Shiluach HaMachaneh, and therefore, Kli Cheres is excluded. So Gemara says, Ihochi. So Rashi says, Ihochi over here is Le'elkoi. It goes back on the original statement of Rav, where Rav said that it has to be a Zachar Vadai, and a Nekeva Vadai, and Lo Tumtum Androginus. Once you say that, then maybe they should be excluded from all Tumot, because the Shiluach Min HaMachaneh is generically speaking about Tumot. And if that's the case, maybe Tumton Androgynous, no matter what Tumah they have, they may not have the requirement to be sent out of the Mikdash, or may not have the requirement of a Korban Olev Yoreid for Tumat Mikdash for Kodoshav. On the other hand, Tosafot over here in Ihachi says, Perish Kaven de Dorish Mizachar Vadne Keva. Ihachi sounds like it's premised off the last statement of the Gemara, and the juxtaposition over here to Mizachar Vadne Keva. Once you're learning from that, Mishesh Lo Tarav Mikveh, then you're not focused on Zachar and Nekeva now individually. You're focused on Zachar v'ad Nekeva. Anything that has Tara v'mikveh. Anything that has Tara v'mikveh, then that should have broader implications than just Tumata Zachar and Tumata Nekeva. Should apply to all Tumot. We're saying now that Zachar v'Nekeva is including other Kelim to be Tamei. And so there you see that it has ramifications for other Tumot. That's the case. Then when the Tumton Androgynous is excluded, they should be excluded from all Tumot with regards to Tumat Mikdash for Kodoshav. Ihochi, ki itmei, bishar Tumot, lo l'shalchu. So wait a minute. If that's the case, then a Tumtum and Androgynous, forget about becoming Tamei, Tumat Zav. Forget about becoming Tamei, Tumat Nida, or Tumat Shechvat Zera. Any Tumat that they're affected by, they should be excluded now. Because you're telling me that Zachar Vadai, Nikeva Vadait, and the qualification of this is Mizachar Ad Nekeva, means anything that requires mikveh to be mitaheret, that's any form of tumah for a human being. Doesn't just mean tumah of emissions, it means any tumah at all. And therefore, maybe even if the Tumtum and Androgynous were tamei mate, they wouldn't have a requirement to leave the Mikdash. Amakra Mizachar, mitumah poreshet min Zachar. This exclusion of Zachar Vadai and Nekeva Vadait is only for things that are uniquely Tamei in a Zachar and uniquely Tamei in a Nekeva, which means the emissions of a Zachar, the emissions of a Nekeva. Something that's common between them, like Tamei Meit, Tamei Sheretz, all of those items, those will impact on a Tumtum and Androgynous, and they all have the same din over there. They will not be excluded from the Pasuk. From this Pasuk now you have a number of Limudim. You have the Limud that, first of all, Zachar and Nekeva teaches you that there has to be something that has tara b'mikveh, and if it's not tara nitar b'mikveh, then it is excluded. That means that kli cheres do not have a din of shiluach min hamachaneh. So that's one din we learn. The second one we learn is that mizachar nekeva zachar vadai, nekeva vadai, not a tumtum and androgynous. The third din we learn is it's mizachar is not just that is any tumah in a tumtum and androgynous that is excluded, it's only Tumat Mizachar and Tumat HaNekeva, which are emissions of a Zachar Nekeva. Now, once you have all of that, then you don't need the Pasuk of the Chol to make the Nefesh to include Klei Matechot, because they're already included based on the drasha that we have now. The Tosafot says, don't worry about that. The Gemara Pesachim has a different limud for that. So you don't have to worry that it's an extraneous Pasuk. So that's how we get to Rav's conclusion. Gemara says, B'chol Eicha Dichtei Mizachar Ad Nekeva, Dim'utei Tumtum Ve'ad Jugnusu Da'ata. Anywhere that you say Mizachar Nekeva, that comes to teach you that Tumtum and Androgynous are excluded. Gabe Arachin, Nechtiv, at the end of Sefer Vayikra, by Arachin, it also uses Zachar Nekeva, and we already darshaned this in Masechet Arachin to tell us, Mitani HaZachar, Velo Tumtum, Ve'Androgynous. Locho Yoliyeh Be'erech Ish. You would think they're not under the rubric of Ish. Avayeh Be'erech Isha. But they would be under the rubric of an Isha. Tamalomar, Hazakar, Ve'im Nekeva. Zakar Vadai, Nekeva Vadait, Lo Tumtum Ve'Androgynous. The problem is that the miut of the Pasuk does not come from Zakar Nekeva, which is supposedly what Rav just taught us, that Zakar Nekeva means Zakar Vadai and Nekeva Vadait. On the other hand, by the case of Arachin, it says, Vaya Erkacha HaZakar Mi Ben Esrim Shana Vad Ben Shishim Shana. The pasuk or the limud that is brought here is ha zakar, the extra hay, and ve'im nekeva, the word ve'im. According to Rav, the word zakar nekeva should have been sufficient to teach us that. Why are you learning it from the ha and from the im if you could have learned it from the word zakar nekeva itself? So time it yekliv ha zakar ve'im nekeva. Had it just written Zakar Nekeva, we would not have excluded it. Where it says, over there, Zakar Nekeva were necessary to be written. Because if the Pashtuta Pasuk, you can't just write Adam by Arachin, because there is a distinction between Zakar Nekeva. As opposed to by Tuma, where you could have written the word Adam, because it's equally applicable for Zakar in Nekeva. Therefore, the writing of Zachar Nekeva was unnecessary. Then you can learn Zachar Vadai and Nekeva Vadai and exclude Tumtum and Androgynous. On the other hand, by the case of Arachin, you can't write the word Adam because there is a distinction between the Erech of an Ish and the Erech of an Isha. Therefore, the words Zachar Nekeva were necessary just to teach you the core din of the Pashtuta Pasuk. So therefore, you can't learn from the Zachar Nekeva that it is extraneous to teach you Zachar Vadai and Nekeva Vadai. You need something else there that tells you that there's extraneous language, which is ha-zakar and ve'im nekeva, and that's why over there they use those alternate words to teach you that they are excluded. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of chaf tet amud aleph.